Welcome to SILRAP Podcasts. You are about to listen to a service of the Center for International Law Research and Policy.
Hello, everybody. I'm happy to be here and to present the situation in Palestine, or perhaps more accurately, the situation in Israel. It's a pleasure to be after the two excellent presentations because it's kind of a continuation, but of course a different context. So I will again go back to a more sociopolitical look. Now for your question, which you know made me think since you asked it, Dov, and I think it's important for the topic of this conference, not to go necessarily top down, but in this situation to look on the ground what is going on and then to bring it back up and to think on this question, what is good, what is should be done, etc. So whoever has followed the situation in Palestine, the situation in Israel, knows that this process has started not with the accession of Palestine in 2015, but before, actually. And I will maybe choose the 2009 as the time when this process started, the dialogue with the ICC. And you know, it's a bit like the cat in Alice in the Wonderland, because the ICC is there and not there, is here and not here. You know, it's like there is the period when it appears and the period when it disappears. And it was really the case, because in 2009, there was the first ad hoc declaration of the Palestinian Authority. So will it be or not? Then there was the question, is Palestine a state or not? Then will they accede the ICC or not? Now, there is an examination. Will there be an investigation? So we are all the time on this, you know, ta-da-da. But this is to say that the ICC has been present beyond the start of the preliminary examination. So when I was thinking what to do for this contribution, I decided to look what happened since the start of the investigation, so the examination, since 2015. But it is difficult to disconnect what I will tell you from the before, right? And also it is very complicated to disconnect from other factors that are on the ground, political factors, which government is today, what conflict has been, I mean, you know, there is many things. So whatever I'm going to tell you is my own look about this period since 2015 to understand the impact, perception, interaction that the fact that the preliminary examination has started, how did it impact Israel? But of course, the ICC is only one of in a list of a multiple factors. So I want to address in these 15 minutes, let's start them from now. five topics. I'm not sure I will succeed, but of course there will be the paper. First of all, I will like to do a press overview. So I tried to read all the articles that were published since January 2015 in one newspaper. I did not do, I mean, obviously one should have done it with all the newspapers, but I did in one newspaper, a daily newspaper. This, of course, will reveal things about the debate. Then I will look about the impact on local NGOs, what happened since the starts of the preliminary examination. Then I will question the question of deterrence. And finally, if we have time, I will look at the question of external political pressure and expectation and perception of the court. So it's a lot of issue. So let's start with the press overview. In the first year, in 2015, you had a little bit less than 60 articles published in this newspaper, and I'm not speaking about opinions, only about article. So, of course, in January, you can imagine it was full of articles about the question of the accession. Here, the main topic was more a reaction, right, of the government, of analysts, etc., to the accession of Palestine to the ICC. In a certain extent, it continued also in April, because then in April it enters in force. So in April, again, we could see this kind of articles. Then May, June, July, you have again this period where the ICC reappear, and it is about the investigation. You had the UN report published then, the UN fact-finding report. You have the issue of the Marmara, you know, so there was quite a lot of issue about the investigation. And then we learn also that the government changed a bit his policy and decided to talk, or I don't know how to say, it's not exactly cooperate, but to be more open to the discussion with the ICC. So this is more or less 2015. The year after 2016, we have much less articles, something like a little bit more than 10. So you can see it's more a disappearing period of the ICC. So what was there was October, the visit of the ICC, which was quite important. I mean, this overview can also let you know that the ICC visited Israel, the office. And then there was a really extraordinary saga that I will go into detail in a minute, which started at November, so November, December, until after Trump, the issue of a law in Israel that was about the regulation of settlements. I don't get into too much details, but I will talk about this. Then we have Security Council resolution, the one that followed, probably recall this one, a day before Christmas, you have Security Council resolution about the settlements. And so this was 2016, and this year, I don't know, maybe my research was not very good, but I could find only two articles. One of them is that the Trump, maybe 2 weeks after entering office, threw the consulate in Jerusalem. I mean, this was the article saying that threatening the Palestinian not to cooperate with the ICC for investigation, because there is a US law that can prohibit US aid if it happens. So I will come back to it. But this is the overview of the press since its beginning until today. Okay, so now what the impact of the NGO? So of course this is not easy for me to analyze this. I'm based on interviews with local NGOs, so take it or leave it. This is what I've heard and I'm telling you. So to my surprise, at least for me, it was unintended at all. I don't know, maybe you will think differently. There was a kind of a big negative effect for the NGOs. And they were speaking about the shrinking of the space, less and less place of interaction at local level. Not only about the delegitimation, whoever NGO will work with the ICC is subject to quite delegitimation, but it's not this. What the NGOs were telling me that before the ICC, you could talk with the government, maybe the government will do something, there were a kind of interaction. But now, if you say the word ICC, the government is not opening the door for this kind of interaction. So in a way, it cut this dynamic. And one NGO also told me that even at international level, it's the same. Because maybe after the Goldstone, you have this committee, that committee, you have like a kind of interaction. But now everybody is putting everything on the ICC, also at international level. So now there is this body that should handle it. And nothing happened outside of this space. And it shrink the space in the sense that there is a delegitimation of, you know, like the one that are working with the ICC, they are traitors, etc. They want to bring our sons to court, etc. Which this one can probably expect. So NGO will prefer simply not to deal with the ICC. in order to continue to have a dialogue with the local opinion and with the government. So this is what I found in this sense. Now I will go to ask the question of deterrence, whether the preliminary examination could have contributed in a way or another to deterrence. So maybe there are two main issues to look at. One, which is the army, the question of investigation, because you know in the ICC we have the question of the war in Gaza in 2014, and a second issue is the issue of the settlement. So maybe we can look at each of these. So about the army, so of course the army did a lot of mechanism, not since 2015, since 2009. The Golson report probably was the first to start this with the Torkel, etc. And you know, we did mechanism and commission and there was this a change. And probably the army is well equipped with very good lawyers, very good, I mean, they invest a lot of, to say the army is not ignoring, the government is not ignoring the ICC. They put a lot of, they invest a lot of energy in this. But something interesting that I was seeing, when people start to speak about the examination of the ICC, we start to have the same criticism. So if before the criticism for local investigation were they are not prompt, they are not enough transparent, they are not enough impartial, they are not effective. And then, you know, the states try to put in place things. We have the same criticism now to the ICC. It's too slow, it's not enough transparent, you know. So you got the same criticism that you had on local investigation, now international investigation, and the examination. And the question is, what kind of signals that it sends to the local examination / investigation? Because if you repeat, I mean, you know, if you will take 10 years to examine something, how can you reproach local authority to doing the same? I mean, and in this sense, if we could observe that the question locally is not examination, persecution, investigation and prosecution, but merely examination to investigation, we see the same thing now in the ICC. Okay, I hope I was clear in this point. Now let's see what happened with the settlement. So in the settlement, it was really a very interesting saga. I will try to tell it because I think it can bring to a lot of reflection. So on the 14th of November, so we have the report of the ICC, the preliminary examination that is issued. And in Israel, in parallel, but not related, there is a bill that is proposed by individual member of the Knesset, ministers, to make legal some of the confiscation of private land on which settlements were built or outpost. So this bill is problematic from a lot of issues, but mainly because this will be the first time that the Israeli parliament will legislate for the Palestinian directly and not through the army. So you could see that at the beginning, the prime minister, minister of foreign affairs, legal advisor to the government, legal advisor to the parliament, they all said that this bill is dangerous, it will bring us to The Hague. And it's really amazing how this Hague was used at this level to try not to make this bill pass, even from the government itself, the prime minister. So this was in the 28th of November. And here we hear for the first time that if this bill will pass, there might be a Security Council decision in reaction. It's almost a month before the Security Council resolution passed. Okay, but it took only 5 days. So the Prime Minister and Ministry of Foreign Affairs will find a compromise, and they vote for the bill in the first vote. completely for local domestic issue. Huh? There is not a big theory here. It's really for a political power of the power of the party of the prime minister in front of the more right-wing group in his party. But again, in the debate in the parliament, the Hague was very present. And in the article, I will bring the citation. So the first vote passed. You need 3 votes to pass the bill. But now it will rest. It will rest until Trump will be in office. We are now in the beginning of December, the 5th of December. Then we have security resolution in the 23rd of December. Now, what is the connection between these two legal stories? I cannot tell you directly. I don't know. You know, I mean, I wasn't in the Security Council. I don't know. From the press, it was said that at first it was an Egyptian initiative. After, it was New Zealand that brought it. So, of course, it's not the US that brought this Security Council resolution. But it did not veto it, and it passed. So probably it was the right moment to, I don't know. Whoever read the Security Council decision, there is nothing new there. I mean, we all knew first law student that, you know, the transfer of population is illegal and no. But in Israel, you had journalists writing that now, because of this resolution, the prosecutor perhaps will open an investigation. I can read you. The fresh support from the Security Council could cause the prosecution in the ICC to dare to move ahead from a preliminary examination to an investigation. And you have a few journalists saying this. So this is probably related to all the internal debate that there were around this law. But the ones that did not follow this because it's really local political issue. So you see this Security Council decision, of course, it's hard to see the connection. Then you have Trump enters in office in the 20th of January, so a month after this Security Council resolution. 10 days after, we read in the newspaper that the American consulate sent a messenger to the Palestinians saying, do not go to The Hague with the settlements. This is more or less how it's written. You should not go. And 5 days after, there is the vote, the final vote on this legislation. Well, I don't know. You can say it's a hazard, yes or not. This is how it happened. You can just read the newspaper, and this is, you can see, reading the newspaper locally, internationally, and Security Council. Now the law is adopted. A day after, there is a petition to the Israeli High Court. I have 2 minutes, yeah. There is a petition to the Israeli High Court. And I'm surprised to see that in the petition, very good local NGO, there is no mention of the ICC. This was their decision. Why? I don't know, but there is no mention. In other petition, there was a mention. In this one, there is not. So what is interesting about the deterrence, usually it's a complex question, but here in this case, you can really see how the ICC was used for completely local political issue by the prime minister and the foreign minister. Okay, so I don't have any more time. Maybe I will just read you the law, the US law, which says that there is this law that prohibits U.S. economic support fund assistance for the Palestinian Authority if the Palestinian initiate an ICC judicially authorized investigation or actively support such an investigation. See, it's not examination, it's investigation. So I don't know if simply the drafter were not that, you know, they didn't really see the difference, which I believe it was the reason. But let's, for their credit, let's say that. So by the meantime, this is okay. Until there is no investigation, the Palestinian can continue. And just to tell you that this Palestinian soup, this money, actually, because the US, and I finish, okay, it's the last sentence. The US is financing the Palestinians in 3 ways. It's financing UNRWA, it's financing a specific account for security, criminal law, and rule of law reform. And you have the third, which is the Economical Support Fund, or the US aid, which is funding NGO, et cetera. And it also pays an amount to the Palestinian Authority. So we speak about this one. But this actually don't go directly to the Palestinian Authority. It goes to pay their debt to Israel. So, for example, they will pay the credit of the energy company and the hospital. Okay, so when we think about the US pressure, this is what it means, at least for now. I mean, I don't know in the future, maybe they will change the laws. This is it. Okay, so the rest in the chapter.
Thank you for listening. For more open access audio recordings, films, and publications, go to silrap.org.